Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. Hitting week 29, we are in full swing of summer and let's enjoy what we have left. Today I will read to you out of a book which I found or got my hands on. I know about this for a while and it's called Shoreham, Life at the Lakes. It has been published by residents of Lake Melissa and Lake Sally, and it's an interesting read. It has, how many pages is this thick here? 200? Almost 200, 180 pages. There's still a few copies left. If you'd like to find out more, you can email us. And before I read about Shoreham, everybody here knows Hotel Shoreham, a popular destination for dining today. And there's a beautiful history behind everything that happened at the lake chain there with steamboats and such, and more later. Before I read, there's some news. Watercraft inspectors in Otter County. While launching your boat this summer, you may have noticed inspectors at some public accesses. Since 2012, the AIS task force has been proactively trying to stop the spread of invasive species from lake to lake. In Otter County, there are 134 public accesses, and from June to September, there will be 12 individuals rotating from access to access checking on boats. Each day, the summer hire will visit 5 different lakes, averaging 12 hours spent on each one. So please make sure to clean your boats and follow the rules, unplug, let the water out before you come and after you fished. Another interesting news we picked up, new plans for a trail from Pelican to Perham. Many residents in the Pelican Rapids and Perham area are aware of a recreational trail that will connect from town to town in the next few years. On June 27th, the latest plan was outlined to county commissioners by County Public Works Director Rick West. So the plan is to focus for now on the west side of the trail from Pelican to Maplewood State Park. Second phase starting on the east side of the trail from Perham in 2020. So lots to come. There's an article that we will share on our website and read up if you're interested to learn more. Upcoming events. Tuesdays in the Park with Tim Egebraten, July 18th, 7 through 8 p.m. in Detroit Lakes. And then the EOT County Fair on July 20th in Perham. The annual East Otter Tail County Fair is this weekend. Go out and enjoy. All the details on our website. Pelican Lake Property Owners Association meeting is July 22nd. And then there's Arts and Crafts in the Park on July 23rd. Over 100 vendors showcase their art to shoppers at the Detroit Lake City Park, located near the pavilion. And the mile-long sand beach admission is free. Northwest Composite HSMTB Team Practice. Detroit Mountain. The Northwest High School Mountain Bike Team Practice will take place at Detroit Mountain. If you're interested to join the team, come join the practice. July 24th, 6:30 p.m. through 8 p.m. All the latest updates usually on our website, lakelifeweekend.com. Check that out. And please now stay tuned for our reading. Yeah, hello. And this week with a unusual guest myself, and I thought I'd read about some history because I found this really nice book and it's worthwhile. I'll read the first paragraph of the foreword for you. You can actually order a few last copies. Please email us and we will connect you with the publishers. You can email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And from the foreword, we thought about this project for several years and watched as other lakes put together their books. Every year that passed, we lost neighbors who could have made valuable contributions. Just think how much Louise Lynch would have enjoyed this project, and how valuable her knowledge would be in clarifying, reconciling and sorting through the bits of information we have collected about early Shoreham. After considerable discussion, we came to the conclusion that the history should be written in the collective voice of the members of our lakeside community. With Bob Hadelstad's ideas, an incentive poster was created in 2005 of early photos from the area to help solicit cabin and family stories, and the response has been gratifying. The book is a compilation of the writings of more than 250 people who wanted to be part of the permanent and continuing history of Shoreham and the lakes. That's the first paragraph of the foreword, and there is so much content on 180 pages. Beautiful read. I think it shouldn't be missed in any cabin. Or maybe you have another publication that you want to share with us. History is definitely a big part of our life, and I think it should be shared. This article here that I'm reading, Early Days in Shoreham, was written by Lloyd W. Sveen in the Fargo Forum on Sunday, July 18th of 1954, published, and it is reprinted with the permission from the Forum of Fargo Moorhead here in this book, and I decided to read this to you. Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. The Northern Pacific train from Fargo huffed to stop, and hot, tired men, women, and children gratefully piled out of the train and into three-seated buggies waiting by the station. Their luggage was loaded speedily, and the team of horses started on a familiar route south through the town to a dock on Detroit Lake, where the passengers happily boarded a steamship. Eager with anticipation, the tourists relaxed as the whistle blew, mooring lines were cast off, and the Lady of the Lake moved smoothly into the lake. An hour later, carefree with the dust and dirt and noise of the city forgotten, the passengers disembarked at Shoreham for a weekend at the lakes, mingling with the crowds who had come for the daily mail. Those scenes were duplicated on many a summer day between 1890 to World War I days, a period which saw the summer resort and tourist business expand from a few cottages to the thriving role it plays today in the economy of this Becker County seat. Of the many people who have contributed to this growth, one man's vision and enterprise is outstanding, that of the late John K. West, who opened and operated the waterway which speeded the development of Shoreham, Lakes Melissa, Sally, and Pelican into popular summer spots. Long before paved highways and high-powered automobiles made traveling easy, John West opened the door of a sylvan, lake-studded vacation land to North Dakotans, not as fortunately endowed by nature. Today, North Dakota license plates abound in this resort area, and hundreds of Fargo-Moorhead residents are less than an hour away from their summer homes. John West was not the first to grasp the potentialities of the region, which today boasts of 412 lakes within a 25-mile radius of the city. Detroit had not yet been incorporated when a company was organized in 1876 to furnish transportation to nearby lakes. In the summer of 1882, 2 years after the village of Detroit was incorporated, articles of incorporation were published in the Weekly Detroit Record for the Detroit Lake and Pelican River Slack Water Navigation Company. This company had an ambitious plan to operate a water route from Detroit to Breckenridge, Minnesota, over the chain of rivers and lakes, which still today results in water from the Detroit Lakes chain eventually emptying into the Red River of the North through the Pelican and Ottertail Rivers. The Bois de Soux and the Ottertail joined to become the Red River at Breckenridge-Wahpeton. The company boosted a capital stock of $250,000, according to an A.H. Wilcox Pioneer History of Becker County article, but nothing was done to implement the plans. One obstacle probably was the formidable job of improving the channels with which nature had connected the lakes and of building a system of locks required by the different elevations between the principal lakes. Some obstacles are not as easily overcome as in today's age of earth-moving machinery, for first dreams of summer resorts came in the age of chatuka, a high-button shoes, and high-button shoes of the horses and buggy. What is now a 10-minute trip from Detroit Lakes to Shoreham in 1882 was a torturous trip over a torturous dirt road. Fargo was a city in Dakota Territory, several days away except by train. One of the incorporators of the Slack Water Navigation Company was listed as William A. Kindred, Fargo, D.T. Kindred owned a real estate business, was a bank vice president, and a Fargo mayor. While the company's plans foundered, a newcomer was busy getting established in Detroit. Its change of name to Detroit Lakes did not come until 1927. He was John K. West, native of Pittsfield, Massachusetts, son of a successful merchant who had received a Bachelor of Arts degree from Williams College in 1868. West arrived in Detroit in 1881 and immediately plunged into a real estate business, which has to become highly successful along with other ventures. West's holdings eventually embraced city and farmland properties in Becker and Ottertail and Hubbard counties. He founded the Fargo-Detroit Ice Company, which still is going concern despite the inroads of mechanical refrigerators. He owned a sawmill, he was a mayor of Detroit, and served many years on the city's Water and Light Commission, and he was one of the most ardent boosters of Detroit and its lakes. By 1886, more and more summer visitors were coming to Detroit. The St. Louis Clubhouse was built on the north shore of Big Detroit Lake, and several private cottages were built on the lake. Northern Pacific trains instituted stops for passengers east of town, and a boardwalk was built across a swamp so they could walk from the railroad to the St. Louis Clubhouse. West built a barge in 1886, a 14 by 32 foot affair with a canopy, which was propelled by a stern wheel operated by horsepower. Used for the first time in Detroit Lake, July 3, 1886, according to the Detroit Record. It apparently made a big hit with the summer visitors as a lake excursion boat, for other barges were built and used through the season of 1889. But West was occupied with a bigger project, for he, like the others before him, saw the potentialities of Lake Sally's and Melissa Big and Little Pelican. In the summer of 1888, he organized the Pelican Valley Navigation Company. West was president, Jeff H. Irish vice president, and George D. Hamilton treasurer. The work of building the waterway commenced September 1, 1888, the Pioneer History says. Thomas Richmond was foreman. Richmond had more of an interest in his job than a foreman's salary, for he built one of the early hotels at Shoreham, along with a grocery store, confectionery store, and other forerunners of the modern resort services. Prior to this, however, he was captain on the first boat. Building the waterway was no small task, as the Pioneer History outlines. A small dam was built at the outlet of Detroit Lake, which stopped the flow of pride. Oops. Which stopped the flow. Oops. I'm sorry about that. A small dam was built at the outlet of Detroit Lake, which stopped the flow of the stream and permitted lowering of the channel to Muskrat Lake. There was a difference of 4 feet, 11 inches between Detroit and Muskrat Lakes, and 1 foot between Muskrat and Sally, for a total fall from Detroit Lake to Sally of 5 feet and 11 inches. The Pelican River was a shallow, crooked, brook-like stream through which it was very difficult to move a small rowboat. A dam was placed across his stream below the outlet of Muskrat Lake and a cut made through the bank into Lake Sally, in which a lock was built. This spot first was called Lock Richmond, then Dunton Locks, as it still is known today, although unused for years. Today it is beside the state fishery hatchery. Work was continued until stopped by cold weather, the history continues. In the following spring, the dam at the outlet of Detroit Lake was removed and a channel dredged out into the lake, the channel between Lake Sally and Melissa, deepened and made navigable. This was accomplished by means of temporary dams which held the water in the lakes and permitted the pumping out of the channels so that the dredging could be done with scrapers, shovels, and wheelbarrows. Permission was obtained from the town of Lakeview to raise the bridges so as to permit the passing of boats. July 25th, 1889 was a momentous day for West and his cohorts, for then a steamboat built by Charles P. Willard of Chicago arrived in Detroit, named the Lady of the Lake. The wood-burning, twin-propelled steamship made its maiden trip down to Canal and through Muskrat Lake and Dunton Lock into Lake Sally. The Lady of the Lake hauled no passengers on its first trip, but picked up barges loaded with ties and sawlogs, according to Mrs. Agnes B. West, widow of John West. The load of lumber was hauled to West's ice house site on the north shore of Big Detroit and loaded on the Northern Pacific's ice track. The delay between the boat's arrival and its first trip resulted because it drew too much water for successful navigation. Willard made necessary changes and West widened and deepened the canal. In June of 1890, the Lady of the Lake began regular passenger service with Richmond, the captain, and this daily service continued each summer until 1902, when the proud boat was relegated to the graveyard, a remote bay in Muskrat Lake, which sheltered the hulls of several less pretentious boats, which also had outlived their usefulness. The Lady was succeeded by the Mayflower, and in succeeding years by the Water Witch, the Robert Fulton, the Shoreham, the Dakota, Miss Minnesota, and the Pelican. In 1891, more than 4,000 passengers made the round trip from Detroit to Shoreham, but West was not content. The waterway was extended south of Melissa to a point on the Pelican River where a dam had been built at Buck's Mills. Buck's Mills today is all but deserted except for fishermen and picnickers, but in its heyday was a thriving settlement with considerable industry revolving around a dam built across the river. This provided water power for a flour mill, sawmill, and barrel stave factory. The Buck's Mills news column in the Detroit Record for June 3, 1891 contains this entry. On Thursday of last week, the shrill whistle of the steamboat was echoed by these hills for the first time. On the day the U.S. mail steamer, the Lady of the Lakes, she took the mail from here to Detroit and return, caused a ripple of excitement. One bright lady said, "Well, we have lived here nigh on to 20 years, and for the most of the time with nothing but the hauling or the wolves and the noise of the river to relieve the monotony. But now Detroit has come to be water in place, and a steamboat comes almost to our door." Business was booming for the Pelican Valley Navigation Company. Chautauqua grounds were established in the south shore of Lake Sally, where the Shoreham Inn formerly was located, after a highly successful interstate summer assembly had been staged in 1890. Captain Richmond not only had his boat filled for the three daily trips, but had to tow a barge filled with passengers for the assembly. Pride of the fleet was the Robert Fulton, the only stern wheeler used on the route. The Fulton kicked up a spray similar to the famed Mississippi River boats, but it was difficult to navigate in the channels and it had to push passengers' barges instead of towing them. But the proud Fulton hauled its share of passengers to Chautauqua as well as logs after the tourist season closed. John West, he had been nicknamed Captain West by Dakota tourists, found a powerful ally in the North Pacific Railway. The young Rouge was aggressively interested in developing every possible source of revenue along its route, and the possibilities of Detroit and its lakes were not overlooked. Early in 1894, the Assistant General Passenger Agent met with local agents from Detroit, Fargo, Moorhead, and Grand Forks to discuss rates. Out of this came a schedule of special daily trains which operated from June 30th to August 30th to bring passengers from North Dakota and northern Minnesota to Detroit. The special trains originated as far away as Pembina, North Dakota, so Canadians, largely from Winnipeg, could take advantage of the railway's offer. The tickets for these special trains operated much as today's ski trains and football specials, included a stop for a round trip on the Lady of the Lakes, so the passengers could enjoy Chautauqua, Chautauqua, and weekend excursions to Shoreham. Part of the time to NP ran a special weekend train from Fargo to Detroit for Fargoans already were confirmed lake dwellers. The train laid over at Detroit until Sunday night. For those who wanted one more night at their cottage, a special boat trip was made every Monday, leaving Shoreham at 6:30 a.m. to connect with a Northern Pacific train leaving for Fargo at 7:53 a.m. While business was flourishing, West was not without troubles. In the early days of the waterway, many lawsuits were instituted by farmers south of Melissa claiming lands were ruined by overflows from the waterway. West won every suit and successfully established the rights of his navigation company. Another construction project remained before West could complete his dam of opening Pelican Lake to tourists. There was a 12-foot drop at the Buck Mills Dam, so another lock was necessary. Excavation for the lock began in 1907. The lock and the channel below Buck's Mills were completed in 1908, after a particularly difficult job in the channel because of many rocks and a very sticky clay which required dynamite. Dredging below Buck's Mills uncovered immense quantities of large clams and petrified bones said to be buffalo bones. Captain West himself took the first boat through the lock at Buck's Mills, known as the Kingsbury Lock. Kingsbury was West's middle name. The Water Witch, a cabin launch, later converted into a passenger boat and still later a towboat, went through the lock on July 8th and headed for Little Pelican Lake. The trip was a big event for farmers along the route, and the crew was greeted with large offerings of homegrown strawberries. A second lock had to be navigated in the river near Little Pelican, for there was a 3-foot drop in the water level. This was called Johnson Lock. The terminal of the navigation company on Little Pelican was on the south side of the lake at Pelican Inn, for many years a famed summer spot. There were two resorts on Big Pelican, Eshelman's, which later became Fairhills, and King's Resort. West did not attempt to extend service to these remote points, but passengers transferred to smaller boats which shuttled between Pelican Inn and the other resorts. The first trip of the Water Witch required a day each way because the 44-foot length was a bit too long for the channel. The boat was cut down and served for a long time, being replaced by the Dakota, a gasoline-powered boat. The transition from steam to gasoline was made gradually, according to George Peoples, now probate judge of Becker County. Peoples and his brother, the late Ben, former Detroit Lakes postmaster, both were teenage pilots during the summer vacation period in the early 1900s. They called us pilots, but our job mostly was to stand in the bow with a long pole to get the boats off sandbars and mud flats, Judge Peoples recalls. West had a floating dredge constantly at work in the channels to keep them clear. One particularly bad spot was the outlet from Lake Sally to the channel into Melissa. This always filled up with sand, and even a breakwater didn't help much. People says the steamboats burned popular cardwood for fuel, and 1 quart of wood was required for the Detroit Lakes to Shoreham trip. The gasoline engines all were three-cylinder engines, which were supposed to be superior to either a two- or four-cylinder engine. I don't remember why, but they were good engines, and it wasn't often they'd break down. The boats had two screw propellers in the back. The pilot would steer the boat with the rudder out in the lakes, but when we got into the channels, the engineer took over, steering the boat by applying power to either the left or the right screw, Judge Peoples says. Judge Peoples was on the Dakota on the run to Pelican Lake. 3 daily round trips were made between Detroit and Belissa, and 2 from Belissa to Pelican. The 20-mile trip to Pelican was described as the most beautiful part of the waterway. Mrs. West recalls, "One was liable to see, in some dead trees at Buck's Mills, a bald eagle or several cormorant near the reeds, or a blue heron standing on a submerged sandbar. There were many loons with their shy young, the bitterns, the wild ducks, and along the canal, in the reeds and bushes, red-wing and yellow-throated blackbirds. Mr. West loved them all, and to old-timers they make lovely memories." The 12-foot drop at Kingsbury Lock at Buck's Mills often startled women passengers, Judge Peoples recalls, although each gate had smaller outlets so the water could be admitted or released for a gradual rise and fall. Captain West developed considerable traffic in Detroit itself because Fairhaven Resort on Lake Sally won a wide reputation for its dining room. Detroit residents would take the morning boat to Fairhaven, eat a leisurely and enjoyable noon meal, and return on the afternoon boat. Richmond's Hotel and the Shoreham Hotel also enjoyed good patronage. Richmond later sold his property to George Pettibone, who raised the original confectionery and grocery store to build a 2-story hotel and store building which still stands at Shoreham. Pettibone Lodge was the mecca of summer resort life for many years after the boat travel ceased. According to Henry A. Castle's History of Minnesota, published in 1915, there were 250 cottages in the Shoreham area and a number of small hotels. The fare to Shoreham from Detroit was 25 cents and to Pelican 50 cents. West had a contract to haul mail during the summer seasons 7 times a week from June 1st to August 31st each year. Among the many mementos turned over to the Becker County Historical Society by Mrs. West is one of the 1915 mail contracts calling for a payment of $138 per year for hauling the mail. Axel Olson, veteran Shoreham boat operator who began working for Richmond in 1908, and Judge Peoples say throngs of summer residents used to congregate at Richmond's and later Pettibone's to wait arrival of the mailboat. Judge Peoples recalls several times when either because of high waves or engine trouble, passengers could not be hauled. "I'd have to hire a small boat to take the mail to Pelican so we could hold our mail contract," he says. "On those days, I wouldn't get back home until midnight." The boats had air chambers which kept the boats afloat even though filled with water, but the closest to an accident came at the time when the Dakota had no passengers. Waves washed over the boat, killing the engine, and while the engineer worked to get it started, an excited captain tossed overboard the load of soda pop being hauled from the Pokegama Works at Detroit Lakes to Pelican Inn. A party of cottagers towed the boat to shore. Judge Peoples says the boats, which could carry up to 35 to 40 passengers, also hauled express baggage and freight. A typical load, in addition to passengers, would be baskets of laundry. 20-gallon freezers of ice cream, big baskets of bread, and the mail sacks. Captain West had built a small factory at Bucks Mills about in 1912 with a water wheel turning a saw to cut up logs into barrel staves. At the end of the passenger season, the staves were hauled to West's ice house site on Detroit Lake and shipped on the Northern Pacific. Many of them went to Germany. When World War I stopped the trade, kitchen tables were manufactured. World War days saw the decline of the flourishing waterway, which at its peak had three passenger boats operated at once. Steady improvement of the automobile and Henry Ford's increasing production was coupled with road improvements, which steadily took customers away from the navigation company, which finally quit all operations in 1918, as nearly as anyone remembers. The locks and channels fell into disrepair when the boat traffic ceased. The Inland Lakes Boat Club of Detroit Lakes is trying to arouse interest in restoring the system, but today there are new obstacles to navigation. The locks at the fish hatchery were rebuilt during WPA days as part of a water control project, and a new set of locks was built on the Shoreham Channel at the inlet of Lake Melissa. The locks are seldom used today, and boats going from Lake Sally to Melissa must be eased over the barrier. The dam at Bucks Mills has been rebuilt, but with no provision for boat locks. In addition, a small water-controlled dam was been built across the outlet of Detroit Lake. Additional barriers to reconstructing the waterway are the new and low bridges that have replaced the high structures which allowed the boats to clear. The people like Mrs. West and Judge Peoples, the days of navigation still are very real, as they are to many a second generation of Fargo Moorhead and Detroit Lakes residents. Lester M. Buck of Detroit Lakes recalls the days when his father, Ted Buck, was a boat captain, a log tender at Buck's Mills, superintendent of the waterway, and manager of West's Buck's Mills Enterprise. Another Dunton Logs employee was William Jeffrey. His son, Robert Jeffrey, runs a boat livery at Detroit Lakes today. John Richmond, son of Thomas Richmond, is another resident with many memories of the waterway. Otto Zeck of the Better County Historical Society has been zealously gathering all possible information and photos of the boats and waterways. One by one, the physical remains of the locks and systems have been disappearing, victims of the new dams and control systems. Wartime scrap drives, the wind and the waves, but John West's vision lives year after year with thousands upon thousands enjoying the lakes he loved so well. This was the article published in 1954, written by Lloyd W. Sveen. I think it gives us a really beautiful summary of history of what we enjoy today with lake life. I'm sure it's worth a family trip to the Becker County Historical Society to read up and see images. I know they have a really beautiful collection of our local history that we enjoy so much, and I feel we should always preserve. And I can just recommend this publication here. Email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com and we can connect you. It has a lot of pictures in here, black and white. And as I said, hundreds of stories, 180 pages thick, hardcover. So I hope you enjoyed our little reading. I hope you're enjoying your weekend. And please feel free to check out our website for today's and tomorrow's events. And we will hear again next week. Thank you very much. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello at lakelifeweekend.com, and you have a wonderful weekend ahead.